You got a new Porsche, huh?
Yeah.
What the fuck? You're rich, right?
You know you're never gonna be as right. Thinking of gold as light. A ship of paper on the sea.
Hey, we're back. It's the steering committee. We're here with our good pal, JJ Collier. We've had a great conversation tonight. We're just in the garage. It's a nice night.
It's a good night. Yeah.
It's a great night.
Yeah.
You did this a while ago, but you came back with
that. I came back with a part two. Yeah. This is what I'm calling movie character, TV character, car pairings, where I think someone spent a lot of time deliberately thinking of a car, almost as if like it's a piece of the costume of the character that they're trying to portray.
JJ,
on the screen.
You are the most stylish man we know.
Yeah.
You're too kind.
So, I mean, like, this is...
Well, and this one, in this particular list, I chose people who I think also, like, the character is also meant to be stylish, and the car also emphasizes that as well. The great clothes choices that they made, as well as also the car in particular, is always something very
stylish.
Also
a fan of the movies, as you admitted earlier.
Yeah, some of these are... we'll introduce you to some
of
these movies.
Walk us through this, Doug. Yeah.
So the first one I picked is a little Tony Scott film called Spy Game. It stars Robert Redford and Brad Pitt in the two main characters. Great movie.
I saw this, yeah.
A very, like, I would say, like, a very restrained Tony Scott film in terms of just, like, you know, the shooting style, but he definitely had some fun with this one. And the main, one of the main characters, Robert Redford's character, his name is Nathan Muir. He is a about to retire CIA officer, and an old school one, a guy that was out in the field for years and years and years, just a, you know, kind of a, like an old school analog agent as opposed to, like, this new wave of digital science-based agents. And, they put him in his in Washington D.C. in these great opening scenes where he's driving at full tilt in a 1968 912.
And that's interesting, Doug.
It was an interesting choice. Yeah,
could have gone 911. Obvious choice. Was 912 just? Most people think it's a 911, or was 912 a considered?
I'd like to think that it was considered because I think in this particular scene, I mean, I think what one thing he talks about in terms of teaching his new protege, who's Brad Pitt's character, is about spycraft. And it's a lot about like being unassuming, being under the radar a little bit, being a little, being like, you know, but able to move quickly when you need to and do what you need to do, but like not be flashy and showy. I think in some ways I like to think that's why they went with the 912. Yeah.
What's the JJ take on this?
Yeah, and then I also just love, I'm a big fan of Robert Redford's, or his attire in the entire movie, basically.
Wait, is that Robert Redford, or is that our friend Tom Horan?
Oh, yeah, it's hard to say. It's hard to say.
What do you got?
Well, how much time do we have? I mean, seriously.
I'll talk about this movie all night.
This is one of my, it's one of my all-time favorites.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
My wife and I have been huge fans of this for, what, almost 20 years?
No kidding.
This movie's,
it's early 2000s.
The opening scene, like Shannon always, my wife always gives me a hard time that I don't have a long hood. 9/11.
That's when you know you're married well.
And her reference is these opening credits. She always looks at this car and kind of gasps, and she's like, "We should, you know."
It's amazing.
So it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, this one is. I was not kidding. Like, I just sent these opening credits to of someone as a reference point for something.
I love it.
And then
you still do mood boards? Is that a thing?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, I build them a lot digitally now. In the early part of my career, it was a lot of spray mount and foam core, which I don't do anymore, thank God. But I mean, this is a huge reference point for me. Not only for the car, I absolutely love the movie and the story, and it's just epic period piece, you know, in its own way too, right?
Like it is, it's great because the story follows
starts in Vietnam, right?
Yeah. Exactly. For me, I love it too because it's jumping back and forth. It starts off in what might be considered the present, but it also might be like early 90s
Cold War
compared
stuff
to like that. Yeah, it's like end of Cold War stuff, transition.
Yep.
But then it does go further back. It goes to they meet and Brad Pitt's character is in Vietnam.
Yep.
And then he takes him through his sort of spycraft training school all through the height of the Cold War.
Yeah, it's
Berlin, you know, they're in Lebanon, they're in a bunch of exotic places like that during the Cold War. It's fantastic. Great movie. Highly recommend it though.
I recommend it as well. But so on the topic of wardrobe, there's a little nuance here that I don't know if many people know. So Nathan Muir here is wearing throughout the whole movie, a herringbone tweed jacket, possibly from Harris Tweed, my favorite mill in the world. Mm. And the blue denim shirt underneath and in this case, a tie. Now off the top of my head is in what, 20 years earlier, 15 years earlier, 3 Days of the Condor with Faye Dunaway. He spends the entire movie in a herringbone tweed jacket and a blue denim shirt and maybe a tie. So for this is a reprise in some way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
even though he's not Nathan Muir in 3 Days of the Condor. Right. So
wow, see?
But this is rad.
But in a way, you find out when you talk to JJ.
No, and now that you mention it, that is like a theory, and it's not because it's different character names, right? Yeah, but it's like he's retiring. This is his last day, and it's like, you know, is there a connection?
So people
to
have
character?
Drawn parallels. They must have, right? Wow. But it's how could you not?
It's amazing though.
That's not by mistake.
It is. It's amazingly stylish. So yeah, all time favorite film, one of them.
Fantastic. Excellent.
Sure. Okay. All right.
I like this one, Doug.
Next one we'll go to is from what I'm showing now is a picture of Chris Evans in the movie Knives Out. He drives.
Entertaining movie.
Great movie. Yeah. Great and movie. I like the sequel too. The sequel was really funny too.
The sequel was good. Yeah.
I thought the sequel was really funny. Yeah. So this is his character. It's Ransom is his name. I can't think of his last name. He drives. This gets bonus points because it's a 1972 BMW 3.0 CSI Silver. A very unusual choice, you know, for like a modern guy. This is supposed to take place in like
deliberate.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely meant to show that he has a certain appreciation for style mid-century, you know, that he didn't just drive a modern 3 Series BMW, a current one. He drove this very particular classic one. And then bonus points because of the house that they show him living in too, which is actually from my part of the world. It's from Lincoln, Massachusetts, the town next to where I grew up. The town is absolutely full of these great mid-century modern glass, you know, sort of open glass, open structure houses.
What do they attribute that to? Do you know why there's consistent?
Yeah, there's, I don't have the particular answer, but there was a movement at the time. There was a lot of professors who were all teaching in Cambridge and MIT and Harvard.
Sure.
And then the land in Lincoln was available, and it was like almost like a, not quite a commune, but like a bunch of them all got together and they bought land, things and they built houses out in this area. So this one's in a neighborhood known as Peacock Farm in Lincoln, Massachusetts. It's beautiful. It was attributed online to Walter Pierce as the architect, but a beautiful, you know, modern mid-century house.
Ravines,
modern mid-century.
We like ravines.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and that's the thing. This house is like tucked away in the forest.
Yeah.
But again, a very specific choice. And like his fashion in this movie has been noted too as like a very, I guess I would say like, maybe not to someone who's in the industry, but like a way to show like a modern stylish man, basically. I mean, the character has many flaws in this movie, but like as a person, he's trying to show himself as to be the stylish of the moment modern man, I guess. So
love that car.
Yeah, me too. It's a great car. I mean, I'm a Porsche guy, but if we talk BMW, we talk CS, CSL.
They're so gorgeous.
My car.
They're so gorgeous. Yeah. Shout out to Jim Barrett.
Yeah.
He had a great discussion about his. Yeah.
He's the guy that owns the 84 Targa. Oh, cool. I'm kind of hoping he'll replace it at some point with his CS.
With a CS.
This is carbureted, so it's not the CSI, but beautiful cars.
Yeah. Next is another show that I watch a lot called Peaky Blinders. Are you guys familiar with this one at all?
Familiar, haven't watched it though.
Outstanding.
I mean, it's several seasons, but in sort of the middle at some point, I think of season two or so, he acquires this 1927 6.5 liter Vonden Plus Bentley. So it's a pre-war Bentley.
So bodied by Vonderplas.
Yes.
Yeah. Vonderplas or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But okay.
But it has like Bentley. Has a powertrain and everything else of like some of the cars that would have been, you know, racing around.
It looks a little different than what
And which is, I think, makes it really cool. I mean, it's basically like race car underneath, but with the comfortable cabin on it. At one point in the show, it has a great moment that only car nerds would ever really appreciate, where because of the plot, they have to get from one city to another city before someone on a train has already left is on. And he said, fortunately, we have the car to beat the train.
Did they do that on Top Gear?
I was going to say that's so Top Gear. Yeah.
He's like, fortunately, we have the car to beat the train. It's, and it's this car. It's really, it's fantastic. Cool. And it just, I mean, the aesthetic of the show, it's, you know, it's 20s, it's Britain, it's industrial Britain, it's gangsters. But I mean, he is always perfectly
turned
adorned.
Out. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely.
The man looks good. Like, I'll say it.
No, the hat. Yeah, that's. Yeah. The suits and jackets are always like a big part of his, you know, if you will, costume of his look. But like the hat, which is a reference to the gang that they're in, but they're always these perfect sort of.
Oh, English okay, hats. That's the title. Peaky Blinders. Okay,
The Peaky Blinder gang was real, and they wore these hats. They had razor blades in them, and they could use them in a scuffle. They could use them to fight off the other, you know.
Let's gang bring
members.
That back.
Yeah, no.
There's not two blocks from Colfax.
There's not
man.
Enough
Let's
weapons
bring
in our
back.
Fashion yeah, at all. Yeah, that's the thing. But that's so. All right. Okay. Bear with me on this one, guys. Next one.
No, this is fun.
It's a very, I think it's a very specific car choice though. Not necessarily like a, I've seen the movie and maybe you guys have too. It's Bridget Jones's Diary.
I thought it was
The
Hangover.
I thought it was. That's right.
No, it's similar.
Same car though, right?
Similar car. Yeah. It's very similar. I don't know my Mercedes as well. Mike, you know, Mike and RJ, I'm really sorry. I don't know these, all of them, but we're talking about Bridget Jones' Diary. It's a 1969 Mercedes-Benz 280 SE convertible. And just to kind of get you at this moment in the plot of the movie, Hugh Grant's character is sort of this like caddish bad boy that Bridget Jones like likes, but you know, he's only sort of interested in a very superficial way. And she is so excited because he pulls up at her apartment in this car to take her off, to whisk her away on a romantic weekend. But it's like a very specific moment. Yeah. I have to say, have you guys seen this scene or seen this movie at all?
Okay.
When you do look at it, and this was part of the thing I was going to show you, they do a part where he revs the engine and he kind of does something to kind of, you know, make her heart a flutter. Definitely not Mercedes-Benz engine, though.
I was going to say, it's not exactly a Ferrari.
No, the engine sounds like maybe Porsche or Ferrari-ish, but not like this Mercedes. It's like a very like
wasn't high designed to be like
but it's about a look, though. It's about a style. And this character has style and look. He's like a magazine editor. I think it's a fashion magazine, in fact.
There you go.
He's meant to be this very, you know, fashionable, you know, good-looking guy and, you know, sort of PQ Grant, if you will. And again, bear with me on this one,
No.
We mentioned this in the last show.
Well, we did.
Yeah.
So I just drove my first R8 ever. For some reason, I'd never driven an R8. Yeah. You had an R8.
Well, I've spent time with them. I've never. Okay. Oh yeah, no, I've never owned one. But when we were doing Spider, we had a. There were a couple of different instances where I had to look after the R8 while for days or a week at a time when we were in the middle of wrap or just post. And I have had at least one track day in a V10.
V10.
Yeah, which was outstanding.
So I drove the worst of the R8s, the single clutch automated V8.
Okay.
An early car, 2008, I think that was the first year. But you know what? I still enjoyed it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I
had a Miltech exhaust.
I really like it. That's our friend Brendan's.
I got more looks in that 15-minute test drive than I've ever had in the GT4.
Yeah, no, this was, but these were this particular era, though.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to whomever, but I like the V1. I like the original body more than the new ones.
I do as well.
I think the new one is beautiful, but it doesn't have that. Someone took a stance on this, and it took nerve.
TT, same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
And then it got a little bit diluted, like the TT.
And
but these are beautiful.
They both warrant that discussion, I think. And what I'll say here, because we haven't really said it officially, this is from a movie called 17 Again, Zac Efron vehicle, if you will, where he basically...
a vehicle, if you will.
Yeah, I get you like that. He's basically through a circumstance of magic and nostalgia, he falls back in time. He is himself again in his school, but where his kids go to school now, to try and fix some mistakes. And he's living with his rich friend who's like a .com start guy, and he has a bunch of cars. And again, specific choice, because his friend had a Lamborghini, he had some other flashy cars. But when they wanted to reinvent him, because he tries to show up at school wearing like a bunch of like bedazzled clothes, and he just looks out of place, and everyone thinks he looks like a douchebag. And his friend takes him out shopping again, and I think they hire like a fashion person. He comes back again wearing, and I've lost the pictures here, but he comes in wearing like the stylish leather coat and white t-shirt, black jeans.
I remember, and a beaver cut.
Yeah, and it was. It's of the moment a little bit. It's of the moment.
Yeah,
no,
it's time.
But,
like, I get it.
But at the time,
a front license plate looks like $2 teeth.
It does. But he comes in and he chooses to take the car to school as the silver R8 with the black side blades. And I think to your point, the original TT and the original R8, I mean, they were so specific and so unusual and so different looking than anything else. I think you're absolutely right. Someone had to fight for some of these things and make it and get through sort of the quote unquote bean counters of some of these car companies who may not have wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I mean, still, I think a timeless design on both of them, especially the R8. I mean, 100%. The R8 looks so good. The original ones look so good.
Yep.
And I think the problem, arguably, with the second generation of this is that they wanted to update it and make it look more modern, but they were trying to keep some of this. And it's almost like it almost seems like a version of this car designed by committee.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one looks like it's one person's focus. Yeah. Yeah.
No, so, it was rad. And I mean, we didn't need another flat car in the world.
Yeah.
Like if I want a Ferrari or McLaren or, you know, I'll go to those brands. So why do I come to Audi for this? And I ask this question against products all the time. Like what does Audi trade on? And in this case, an all wheel drive version of sports cars was pretty new at the time, I suppose, in its own way. And this was really elegant where there were no, at least when you bought this one, you didn't have big wings. You had one intake statement that was integral to the design. You know, it wasn't a bunch of flash. It was a really, really good looking, elegant sports car if you wanted that kind of flashy low sports car.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it did. It kind of, it gave you the cred you would have of having something exotic looking because it's mid-engine and it's low slung and everything like that. But you're right, like almost restrained a little bit, pulled back just like a little bit in perfect amount.
Yeah.
And I do, I appreciate the ones without spoilers on them. I like them in these silver and black colors. You know, I think a great moment of someone choosing that car for that scene. All right, last next one is Batman versus Superman.
Okay. This is one I did not see.
No, I can tell this is definitely not. And honestly, the rest of the movie is really forgettable for me, except that
I've never even heard of this one.
Yeah, you never heard of Batman versus Superman?
No.
Yeah, it happened. Okay. It happened circa like 2000.
Sounds like a money grab to me.
2015-ish, okay. I think, yeah.
JJ thoughts.
Didn't see it.
Okay.
Well, and honestly, the rest of the movie, there's about a 2 or 3 minute YouTube cutout of just this section. This is all you need to watch. You can scrap the rest. This is Ben Affleck taking over as Bruce Wayne / Batman. At this particular part in the movie, it's actually kind of it's part of the plot of a little bit. He wants to find out some information about what's going on. So he's getting ready to put on the bat suit. And Alfred, his butler, played by, English actor. Anyways,
Michael Caine.
Different English actor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They recast
him. There's another one?
The most stylish version of Alfred ever. He's not wearing a tuxedo at all. He's just wearing normal clothes. Yeah, he says,
three orbits out of my comfort.
Batman can't do what Bruce Wayne can do because he want to get to the guy's house. You've been invited as Bruce Wayne to this stylish party at his house. So instead of putting on your bat suit, put on this suit, which is of all black, different tones of black.
Murdered out.
Suit. Yeah, exactly. Murdered out. He's living, again, bonus points on this one. Couldn't find the architect or the exact person to attribute it to. A very modernist, almost Farnsworth house style glass house.
It's like Cameron's house.
Yeah, apparently it's in Michigan. I was able to determine it's in Michigan. It's a lake house. Very minimalist. I mean, like it's basically iron posts and glass and just floating planes of roof, open garage. But he puts on his suit. He goes out, he pulls the dust cover off of a 1957 Mark III Aston Martin.
Yeah.
And just drives away in it.
Doug, I am perfect. So proud of you.
Perfect. For
embracing the brand.
Like, oh, yeah. No, I had to do a little reading on it, but it's a very historic brand out of England. Anyways, and then he shows up at the party, like in the car line, and he immediately gets all the buzz because of, it's Bruce Wayne. He's a billionaire. It's, he's got this very stylish car.
You're a villain, though.
He's kind of the Dark Knight persona, which also translates to Bruce Wayne as well. But again, he figures out in this situation, it's better to be stylish billionaire Bruce Wayne to get the information you need. And a very interesting car choice. I don't think I've ever seen Batman in an Aston Martin. That's not something you normally see. So, all right. Hopefully, we've all heard of this last one.
Well, this is Pulp Fiction.
Little movie called Pulp Fiction. Love this reference, though. And it was maybe a little bit unusual at the time, but...
Well, yeah, because it was early on in the life of this car.
Yeah, so we're talking about the scene where a character that we don't know quite yet, his name is the Wolf, and he's getting some details. He has to go over and help the two guys.
Also the cleaner?
His role. Yeah, he's the cleaner in this scene. So... Jules and Vincent have gotten themselves into this trouble. They've unfortunately shot somebody accidentally in the back of their car. The car is a complete mess and they have to hide and they're trying to figure out how to like get through to the next
point. We foreshadowed this.
With your story about the Uber car with the comforter on the back seat.
Hoping it wasn't blood.
Hopefully, I said it could have been worse. So anyways, but he's on the phone. He's taking down the details. He takes a quick look at his watch, which I'll note is a...
God, that's ugly.
Yeah, I was going to say, that looks like a very moment in time and maybe like his age. It's a vintage Gucci Swiss-made quartz watch. How do we feel about that? I don't love that.
I'm not feeling it at all. That's how I feel.
But. Well, that was a horrible license. That was a bad call.
Do you think that was like to get the product name on there really quickly?
Maybe? Oh, I mean, there's story. You can read all kinds of stories about Gucci. Mm. The reason why Gucci, or one of the key reasons why Gucci floundered during the 80s and stuff the licensees were responsible for that.
Yeah. Shout out to my pal Andrew Connell. Right. He and I went to the Castleton Square Mall in Indianapolis where we both proceeded to buy Gucci branded watches and then go have lunch at McDonald's. And it was a big deal.
Because of Pulp Fiction?
I don't know if it's, but the watch was similar.
Because it's like McDonald's. You said McDonald's too. That's also like...
Oh, yeah. I did. The Royale with cheese.
Yeah, this whole discussion. Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, maybe we can... I don't know. You guys are watch people. What would we recast the Wolf watch? I mean, what would be... But I mean, he's a specific character. He's in a tuxedo. He's put together.
I mean, a Cartier tank would have made sense.
There you go.
With because that's the kind of low profile thing you'd wear with a shirt cuff like that, where you can't have any chunk.
Okay. There so, okay. So Cartier tank.
Yeah.
Tank. Okay. Good. Yeah. Good.
But
choice,
one quick thing on this, I don't know if you guys noticed, but I remember being a kid and seeing, or being in my early 20s and seeing this for the first time, the sound engineer did something interesting on this. When Mr. Wolf, when the Wolf rolls up, he screams down the street and he comes ripping up to the camera and stops. And there's something about how the engine turns off that's different. And it's very deliberate. It was like there was no wind down at all. Yeah. It's like he comes to a stop and the engine's off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's something epic about the edit. So the next time you're watching it, take a look and you'll see what I mean. It's unnatural, but it's perfect.
I'll listen to that. Because that's, I mean, and it's almost like that fits in because he's like, it's where? Okay, it's 30 minutes away. I'll be there in 10. And it says like at the bottom, like 9 minutes and 39 seconds later.
He's
and it's
screaming just like around the corner.
Screaming around the corner. Yeah. But that's his thing. He's like, I'm here. I'm quick. And he talks quick. And he talks and he gets things across quick. And he's like, I don't have time for any of this. It's like, I need to do this, 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 and the other. And if I'm rude, you know, it's because time was of the essence.
Yeah, oh, it's so, so, I mean, it's a perfect scene.
Yeah, pretty pleased with the cherry on top. Yeah. You know, clean the motherfucking car.
Yeah, yeah. it's
sort of his personality. Yeah, it's a great, And again, but an early NSX, I don't think we actually said that.
No.
An early
silver,
NSX.
Which silver, which was also that was the choice. Move, right?
Beautiful. Yeah. Another classic.
What a, I mean, talk about a car that's held up.
Yeah.
Just held up so well.
So good looking still. I love those. Yeah. And I'm kicking myself. They had dropped down to even like the $30,000.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, I mean, now, and that those days are gone.
Yeah.
Our pal Alan from Rivian just posted a picture of a first gen NSX and said, you know, this is what a timeless design. Yeah. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, that car's held up better than just about anything of that era. Yeah.
And it's one of the few supercars or cars of this era, sort of this caliber. I've actually spent significant time driving.
That's
and
right. It's just, I have not. Doug has thousands of miles. Honestly,
driving it makes you love it even more. It's so perfect in so ways.
Yeah, I've never. I sat in one recently, and I was completely taken by the interior too.
Yeah.
I mean, the interior is so rad.
I would buy an NSX.
Oh, me too. I would totally buy one.
But the interior holds up, which is sometimes what gets let down in these situations. But the interior looks perfect. Still too very, you know, everything you need, you know, minimalist to a point, but like driver focused, you know, fighter, whatever.
Well,
you
the way it wraps around, like it's very cockpity.
Yeah, very cockpity. Yeah, great car. Yeah.
Yep. So. But I want one in silver, much like the cleaner.
All right. Back to Porsches for our last one. This is a little TV show called Californication. And this is definitely
David Duchovny.
Yeah. This is one where, you know, it's a the background on this TV show is that he's like kind of he's a writer, although he, in his heart, he's really like a punk rocker. Mm. He's like a rock star mentality, but he writes.
Yeah.
And you know, but he does the classic, you know, cliche thing where he sells out and he moves to California because one of his books got optioned as a movie.
Sure.
But he somehow pulls off moving to California, driving around in a convertible Porsche, but without it looking like sort of like a stereotype or anything like that, because he's driving around in a 964 generation with a headlight smashed out. And he that happens in the very first episode at the very beginning. It happens because of one of his escapades. Yeah.
Well, it's Venice.
That's
that.
Right. Yeah. Do you know the scene I'm talking about? You know,
yeah, of course.
Yeah. He gets his headlight smashed in because he sleeps around with a lot of women, and one of the women he sleeps with has a significant other, and he gets mad and smashes the headlight. So he never fixes it. And he carries this so far to the point where at some point he has to replace this car. This one gets wrecked and he buys a new 964 to him. And the first thing he does, he takes out the tire and he smashes the light out and he continues it on.
Yeah,
as like a,
say,
yeah.
It's gotta be hard to watch.
It's hard to watch. And I agree. And I don't think any of us would necessarily do that. And I don't think most of our audience would do that, but it's definitely a deliberate choice on his part. The car becomes like sort of like anything, like his jacket.
He's David Duchovny, damn it.
Like
he's married to Taya Leone.
But he's got a black eye. I mean, not a figurative one.
Yeah.
In the show. I mean, his character.
Oh.
Has
okay.
I mean, let's
I've never
be honest.
Seen it. It's interesting.
He's got a black eye.
There oh,
he's
go. God, so you're going deep.
I'm just thinking. Yeah, but I mean, no shit. So the car sort of has to like.
It
have
has to represent
one.
Him. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not light. It's a great show, but it's not light, really.
It's not light. It gets
a bit big there at the end.
I've gotten through the first couple seasons. I did. Yeah. I did trail off at some point, but I do know he gets this car again later on.
I know, it's so funny.
It's so funny, yeah.
It's definitely a great part of it.
Right. I mean, the car is really a part of his extension. So
well, this is fascinating. A fascinating breakdown of modern cinema here at the steering committee.
Well, and
JJ Collier.
But I mean, this stuff you know, it just shapes our lives, right? If we do this again and we go back even a little further, think about when we were 9 or 10 and you go to a friend's house who had HBO. We had HBO and my wife can't believe it because we're in rural North Carolina. It's like, why do we have HBO? There's nothing else to do. But those movies, you know, Against All Odds.
Yes.
We've tried to use that as an episode starter for a while. I mean, just haven't found the red episode.
That's the one with
who was it? It was
James Woods. And Jeff Bridges.
That's right.
Ripping around Brentwood in a red Ferrari and a black Targa.
That's what he says. That's the quote. He says, "You're rich. Yeah, you should buy a Porsche.
Might as well. Right? Yeah, I know.
It's a great scene though. And they, I mean, so iconic that they recreated on Entourage.
Go look at it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, do Entourage Ferrari race and you'll see. It's like, I saw that before I saw the
movie. Oh, really? Oh, no way.
I went back and so I was like, what? It's like almost shot for shot remake.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's what I mean. Those things meant they shaped us, you know, it was a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, we were talking a little bit, I think, about License to Drive. I mean, that's one. I mean, and then, Weird Science.
Business. Yeah. I mean, these things were powerful when you were 12.
When a car like that showed up in one of these movies, it made an impression. Yeah, exactly. Risky Business. I mean, you know, there's so many. I was actually just thinking about, do you guys remember the movie The Rookie?
No, I know the name.
Clint Eastwood and Charlie Sheen.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Baseball movie?
No. Oh. No. 1990s cop movie, buddy cop movie.
Okay.
But these particular cops are like Grand Theft Auto experts. And so there's this master criminal stealing all these great, you know, so late 80s, early 90s vintage cars.
Clint Eastwood didn't win an Oscar for that.
I don't think so, but it's got some good moments. It's got some good car moments in it.
Who knew Dream Machine existed, right? I mean,
how many Oscars?
And now you know.
How many Oscars did Dream Machine win?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, JJ saw it in period, so you know, there's that. Okay, so we have recorded for an hour and 35 minutes. I think we're going to take that bit. We're going to turn it into a bonus episode, which will be wonderful. Yeah. So if you haven't already listened, please listen to part one of this with JJ Collier. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Hope to have you back soon. We're the Steering Committee. Good evening. Thank you.